So hello everybody and welcome to another episode of Conversations with Remarkable Women. And what's Remarkable Women all about? My name's Danielle McLeod. I'm the co-founder of our organization where we work with women who want to create a remarkable life for themselves and who want to make a difference in the world their way. And they want to do it without the cost of health, relationships, security, all of those things that we think we have to trade in order to have the things we most want in the world. And so our work is all about guiding women along a path that shows them that maybe they can have even more than they thought, and they can have more impact than they thought, and that they can create the things they want to create without compromising in other spaces. And so we're regularly talking to women inside of our community on this podcast and women outside of our community. And we better do a disclaimer up front because I'm speaking to Kelly today. And Kelly has been part of our world since the beginning. But also Kelly and I have known each other for more years than I would like to say on air. Hi, Kelly. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Hello, everybody. It's really nice to be on.
Yeah, so I want to play today, Kelly, with you've got a big job, right? But we don't want to go there today. I want to talk about how you've learned to be in creative expression in the world and kind of your journey, such a twee word, isn't it? But you know what I mean, your journey to uncovering sides of you that probably were sleeping actually for quite a long time. Because I've got to say, 3 years ago when you signed up to I think one of our first programs, you were one of the faces I was like super surprised to see your name there, because I was like, Kelly's not going to do this stuff, right? So, and what I saw really quickly was you were exploring and trying to and discovering new things in life, right? So can we go back to there, or even before there, around what had you start to delve into? I'm making up the question, so it may not have been this, maybe there's more to life.
Yeah. No, first of all, I love that it totally rocked your boat, because that just makes me feel so like I got you. But yeah, you talked about creativity, like you said 3 or 4 or 5 times, create the world you want, create this, create that. So that was just really exciting to hear. And the reason why I joined you guys, I can go back to my childhood. I'm going to do a bit of a Charles Dickens on you here. What was really interesting was this story that I've carried around creativity, and particularly art for me, because I am a painter and a landscape artist and a creativity coach, was at school, I was best friends with a wonderful person called Elizabeth, and she was the art one, and I couldn't be the art one because I was the drama one. So I didn't do it, and I did GCSE art, and I'd been surrounded, I grew up on the fair, so I'd been surrounded with graphic art and sign writing and all these wonderful colours and craziness all of my life. And I kind of just turned the dial right down on it for years and years and years, and carried this really bizarre story in my head. Didn't even know I was doing that, by the way. That was like my little crazy lady in the back carrying that story. Until I kind of went through what I guess a lot of women go through, particularly a lot of women in Remarkable Women or who are interested in this podcast, where we kind of go, okay, high achiever, bigger, better, faster, more. What's next? What's next? What's next? And I got on that corporate thing and I built my career, global marketing director, blah, 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 did all that stuff. My husband left. I was responsible for these kids. I'd kind of stepped into quite a dry environment to get us a house and to get us a holiday and to get us God knows what that I didn't need. And I kind of went, oh my God, what the hell have I been doing for like the past 20 years? My sense of responsibility, my sense of play and freedom and exploration, it's like, this was never me when I was 14, 15, 18, 12. What have I done? Sorry, I do little swears. I'll try.
It was lovely. You did it without saying the word. It was great.
I know. It was kind of like all this heavy responsibility had been totally, by choice, like loaded on me. And I know that that's the same for many women. You know, we see a lot of our partners or a lot of our male counterparts and friends playing on PlayStations and building Lego and playing football, and women tend to lose a lot of that and kind of check out the fun and the exploration for responsibility and either motherhood or kind of general motherhood of other people in their lives, whether you've got kids or not. And I found that I'd got really weary of it. And I'd got out of this like initial trauma of a marriage breakup. And a few years later, felt stable, secure, but still like my soul was like this gnarly old dried up husk of a thing that had washed up on a beach somewhere that had been bleached and sandblasted for years, floating around in this corporate ocean. And I just came up onto this beach and I was like, this is a good place. This is like my place. And that was really my creativity and my soul expression, if you like, starting to speak to me. And that sounds a bit woo woo, but I really, really felt I need to get out of this, you know, bleaching turbulent ocean and onto this lovely warm tropical beach. And I stepped into at that time, going back to your question or your point, I kind of stepped into a point in my life where I was going, right, this isn't doing it for me. What else do I need to wrap around myself? And I actually went to art class. I joined a Shakespeare Theatre company and I was in a play. And I messed around with lots of creative things. I joined a commercial committee for a local arts organisation here called Quad. Met my boss now through that and decided that, you know, I wanted to jump out of corporate life and get into a more creative environment. So I came back to working in design agency, which is where I am now.
Had you been doing any creative stuff prior to that light bulb moment?
Yeah, I mean, my start of my marketing career, I was in agency land. So we were doing ads and campaigns and, you know, all the things that people think is like the creative part of business. So I guess I had, but from a personal point of view, no, I hadn't been drawing or painting. I suppose creativity domestically, like what am I going to make for tea, that kind of stuff, but nothing that was like on the scale of what I've even imagined doing now.
I mean, I don't remember you as a child. I don't remember you painting at all. Did you? Have I blocked that out or was it actually happening?
No, I was the drama rama.
Yeah, totally.
So I really enjoyed it and I really enjoyed crafts and more sort of hands-on stuff. And I've since learned that I have no capacity for really technical craft because I'm just too bored with it. So I've kind of gone back to painting. And if you look at my stuff, it's quite broad and expressive and quick anyway. So amongst all that kind of stepping into a more creative life, getting onto this lovely, beautiful beach, I needed some people on that beach. Like, I didn't want to be on my own in it. And you guys just like serendipitously just stepped into your creative beach. And we're like this archipelago. We've all got our little beautiful islands, but we all link up. And it's really lovely because you guys went, we're going to do this Somebody Inside at the time online program. And I was like, why not? It's an adventure. Let's do it. And it just kind of snowboarded and it all just seemed the right thing to do. So yeah, it was kind of like making sure I had a tribe of people that had a new mindset so that I could move into a new mindset, because the hardest thing in the world, isn't it? It's like a dance. You know, you change your steps to your dance and the other person goes, you keep doing my dance and you actually want to learn a new dance. So it was great to kind of be with you all doing that and getting that support.
I love that you're saying that, because I think for anyone who's listening to this wanting to make change, one of the things we know is really hard is swimming against the tide, right? And trying to swim against the system. And so bringing other people around you who may not be in the world that you're in, but can at least hold you true to what it is you're trying to create is really important, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Everybody needs a tribe, and your tribes kind of shift and change and they're quite organic. And I think as a natural rebel, I hate being like in an established tribal group anyway, because I go, oh, I don't want to bloody be in this tribe. I want to be in my own tribe. And then I go, can I come back and join your tribe? I'm ready now. And I do that all the time. And it's not because I don't love people or I don't want to be with people. It's just because I like to explore. But you do need people who can hold you to account, who can push you, who can say, really, you believe that bullshit? You know, you've got a bullshit button. I need one of them. Yeah.
I should have brought it. I don't have it. We do have a bullshit button. Yeah.
No, right. You need a bullshit button. You guys are my bullshit button. So
I'm going to stop saying that. No, your bullshit's fine. Just don't do the other ones.
Okay. So yeah, it's really important. And actually, I think it's really important not to have a tribe of exactly the same people as you. because then you don't really get a chance to explore and grow. And I get bored very quickly. I have a short attention span, which is why I'm a big picture person. I'm a creative person. I'm an imagineer. I do all the kind of creative things, even in my salaried job, you know. And I think if you get yourself in a place where you're surrounded by exactly the same people, one, it will annoy the hell out of you, and two, you won't go far. You won't get this out of your own head.
I love that you're saying that, because actually I saw that. That's one of the things that's really important to me in the community, that it's not kind of middle class white women groupthink, right? Which is quite funny, because obviously maybe two middle class white women having a conversation here, but that's not wholly reflective of the community. But also that we don't fall into believing that we live the truth and nobody else does, right? Or our things are right and nobody else's are, because actually I'm out in the world looking for provocation. Because one of the things I noticed, and I know you must do, because you're quite different. You're the same and different, right? Same as me, same and different to who we were long, long time ago in the years I won't mention. in that I've changed my mind significantly in the last 5 to 7 years on some really big stuff, right? And so I think I see that in you too. Like, there are questions you're exploring now that had they been put to you 10, 15 years ago, you'd have been like, why are you even asking me that, right?
Yeah, I think I'd inherited a lot of belief from quite a sort of individualized background with my family and with boarding school. So I think there was all that to kind of get through, maybe in my 20s. And I was so eager to step out of where I actually wanted to be and into perhaps where husbands wanted me to be, or partners wanted me to be, or then children wanted me to be, employers wanted me to be. And I was so surprised at how rebellious I was as a kid and as a teenager, then how I kind of just let myself kind of just become beige. And I was like, what the hell have I done that for? And I didn't even know. It just crept up on me. So you just don't correct it. And it's like that hair analogy you know, how long has your hair grown? You turn around 10, 15 years later and you're like, oh my God, what happened?
I love it, because I don't have your rebel tendencies, but I do have chameleon tendencies. So I grew up learning how to be what people need in the room, you know, like, how do you make people think you're the best person in the room, where you fit in with whatever it is they want to create, and you fit in a really skillful way, right? And so it was really interesting for me. I didn't ask the question till I was in my late 30s. Who actually am I when I'm not interested in whether people like me or not? And, you know, that was one of the most exciting journeys of my life, actually, was to say, well, what if I put myself in an environment with people where it doesn't matter whether they're my friends or not? How would I express myself then? And of course, then you just peel off all these layers that have been, you've grown over time in order to fit in with the system. And it was like, I liked who I was underneath much better than who I'd become.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing. You don't massively change at your heart center. I think you kind of surround yourself with different roles and different responsibilities. It is peeling away the layers. You do grow. I'm not saying people don't grow, because that'd be stupid, but I think it's more about kind of just really settling into yourself as well. Like, in my 40s now, I feel this is my favorite decade. It's my oldest one. I mean, the alternative is pretty rubbish, because I don't want to not be 40, because then I'll be dead. But, you know, it's like, it's the best time, because I feel really self-assured and confident, and more like I used to be as a, like, before life happened, if you know what I mean. And I feel like I've taken control, and that's a massive thing for me as a rebel. You know, I felt, for all the people who know the four tendencies, there's that, the opposing ones, what's it called, the one that you are,
the upholder. Yeah,
the upholder, sorry, I was so the upholder's up here and the rebel's here, or here and here, or there, whatever. And you know, you don't go to your opposite. You can branch out either side, can't you? But you don't go to your opposite. And what I realized by journaling and support with therapy and stuff after my divorce was that for years I had been forced and allowed myself and put myself into the upholder position in my life, which caused me so much bloody tension, because I'm the rebel and I'm like rebelling against myself. But no, you mustn't do that. But yes, I want to. But no, I did. And this was like constantly going on. So like, my heart and soul was just knackered from all of that. And as soon as I was allowed, and that's really not a good way to say it, but as soon as I allowed myself, I guess, to step out of being forced into this upholder position and said, actually, I don't want to live like that. I want to live like this, it changed so many things.
I'm just going to stop you on that in a minute so I can expand for the listeners, because this is such an important point. And actually, I always find when we uncover, when the rebel uncovers the rebel spirit, their lives change almost in the moment. That's why it's so exciting. So we use a great book by Gretchen Rubin called The Four Tendencies, and it's about what motivates you to take action. There are four, obviously, because it's called The Four Tendencies. So the upholder, me, meets my own expectations and meets the expectations of others. So completely the opposite of the rebel. I do what I say I will when I say I will. And I'll say no if I want to say no, right? So that sounds great, apart from the fact that upholders are also a pain in the backside because they're quite rigid, inflexible. I don't like it if somebody says to me, we're going to meet on Tuesday, and then on Tuesday morning says, oh, can we do Thursday? Because like my whole life is planned around Tuesday, you know? So there's a struggle to move in me. And the opposite of me is Kelly's type, which is the rebel. And the rebel meets nobody's expectations, including their own, in service of their core driver, which is freedom. And so rebels can self-sabotage because the thing they should do is compromising their freedom, but also they're highly expressive, highly spontaneous, highly creative, usually big ideas people. I'm married to a rebel. You know, one of the things I love and hate about my husband is I never learn the way anywhere because he never goes the same way twice. Like John knows every single road in Edinburgh, and every time we go somewhere, he goes a different way. And I've lived here, I don't know, 14 years now. And I'm like, I've never been down this road before. And he's like, yeah, you have. Cause he has been down every road in the city. He should be a black cab driver in another life. Right. But I also love that because there's an adventure that the rebel brings that is so critical to life. And I think when the rebel realizes they're a rebel, like, why am I not doing this thing that I should do, which an upholder would just do, right? Or at least weigh up the risks and then make a calculated decision, whereas the rebel just like doesn't do it. You come alive, I think. I mean, I've seen so many rebels, once they embrace their rebel spirit, literally come alive. And I think yours was always there. It's like you put a cloak around it, right?
Yeah, I did. And I chose to do that. And there's only so long. It's like Big Brother. You know, you see them crumble at like the second weekend they're in the house because they can only play act for so long. And then you start to see the real character come out. And that's what happened. Absolutely, that's what happened.
So tell me about this explosion into art. Because for those of you who are listening and not watching this on YouTube, Kelly's in a room in her house at the moment, and I can see four paintings behind you that are definitely yours if I'm reflecting correctly. I certainly recognize the bottom three. And I mean, it was, in my experience, it was literally like, well, one day you kind of went, I'm painting, and then the next minute it was like, I don't know, 20 30 really accomplished canvases that appeared in the world. And is that how it happened?
Yeah, kind of. I think what's really interesting is how we talk about creativity and we talk about creative pursuits or creative activities, and they're slightly different. So I think I was always creative or had creativity. I believe we all have creativity, but creative pursuits require a basic level of technique and skill, and you have to learn stuff. Like, you know, unless you're some sort of weird genius, you can't just sit down at a piano and play a concerto. You have to learn how to do that. So there was an element of working at it. But I think for me, creativity is just like curiosity plus action times repetition. Literally, that's it. And I don't do maths, but that's a formula. So curiosity.
Did you just make that up, or have you always had it?
No, that's it. Times repetition. It's just come to me. Because you just have to keep asking why am I doing that? Why is that blue? Why am I putting that? Should I do this? Should I put that painting there? Should I do this brushstroke? And then you take an action and a decision. You go, now I'm going to correct it. Oh, I'm going to leave it. I'm going to change this. I'm going to do that. And you just repeat that and repeat that and repeat that. I mean, there's a lens through that of bravery, you know, or of interest as well. So I wouldn't be this interested in another creative pursuit that just wasn't my thing. I'm sure I could apply myself to a bit. I'm a bit of a Renaissance woman. I can do a few things, all sorts of different things, but it kind of has to grasp your passion and your excitement. And then it just snowballed really quickly. So I think it was mindset as much as creativity and as much as technique. It was that bravery and conviction. I love this. I can do this. It's only a piece of paper. If it goes wrong, I can rip it up. You know, it's all fun. It's all great. And since in the last 3 years, I've learned how to paint. I've taught myself how to paint in oils and actually been on one small course for oils. And I'm now selling originals. I'm taking commissions. I've demoed for art groups and I'm at 2 art festivals this year. So boom, you know, that kind of stuff happens. Like, you've written a book and it's on Amazon. Actually, I can see it on my app. Sometimes I look at it just because it's like your name on it. Oh my God, you've written a book. It's amazing. Yeah. One day you haven't written a book. One day you've got a book published. And I know there's a long period in between, but basically that's what happens, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. And then there's so much you said there that I'm like, oh my word, let's just unpack this, because this curiosity plus action plus repetition, I think there's so much I want to play with, because this idea that you said at the beginning, like, you can't sit at the piano and just play piano, right? And I remember I decided to have a go at learning to draw, I think 4 or 5 years ago now, and I used this particular book and discovered, actually, no surprise, I can draw, right? Because I'm a kind of, give me a process and I'll follow the process and then whatever comes out will come out. And I can draw really well, right? But one thing she said, I'm so frustrated with the way we teach art. She said, because what happens in schools is that kids walk into a room and there's paintbrushes and paints there, and the art teacher goes, paint a thing, right? She said, but if you went into reading class, you don't walk in and there'd be a load of books on the floor and the teachers go, have a good read, and walk out, right? She was like, there's technique here. And so your point about, and as soon as I read that, I thought, oh wow, that makes so much sense, because I don't remember ever being taught technique. I remember, like, a picture being at the front of the room and being told that should inspire us to paint something. But I don't remember anyone physically showing me, here are some techniques and skills that you could apply with repetition that would mean you get better. Is that your memory as well?
Yeah, absolutely. And you need a certain base level of competence so that you don't get frustrated and bored. So I don't know if you guys know the book Flow. Yes. By...
that guy whose name we can't pronounce, Mikhaili Mihaly or something.
Sixth Sense Mihaly is what I call him, like some sort of rapper from Eastern Europe, but I'm sure that's not how you pronounce it. But basically, he has this little graph, like a stepped graph, and when you're in flow, which is really in the moment, present, totally fulfilled, forgetting the world around you, sort of state of happiness and contentment, there is a level of competence which then kind of plays out, and then you get bored, and then you need a challenge to take you up, and then it plans out, and then it kind of steps up, and that's the state of flow. It's not as fluid as everybody seems to think. You need a building block, and you need a technique, and you need something to get you to a point where you feel competent. Then when you feel more competent than required, you have to step the challenge up, and then you feel more competent, and then you step the challenge up again. And that's what people I think kind of confuse creativity or having a creative soul with being able to do creative things. There is so much technique in all sorts of different arts, from performance to visual arts to, you know, to writing, everything. You can't just expect to do it. You can expect to have a flair and a passion for it, but you need to give yourself some armor and some tools and some weapons to go out and, you know, take over the world of painting or drama or whatever it is. It's really important.
And where was the courage for you in all of this? Because I'm thinking about some of our listeners, right, who, because your point about action, I think, is so important. I was feeling quite stuck with something myself today, and I remember just literally last night I was prepping a masterclass for tomorrow for our community and reading this guy saying the best way to get out of overwhelm is to step into action, even if the action is almost academic to what it is you're procrastinating on. And so and I thought, well, I can do that. I can move myself into action. You know, action is one of my things. Anyone who works with me knows that. And there are a lot of people who struggle with the step into action. And I think people would make up, you have a high degree of courage. But I also think there must have been points in this journey that required courage for you to become creatively expressive. Can you share with us what some of those were?
Yeah. So being creative and being publicly creative is like a breeding ground for all of the horrible, nasty stuff that you tell yourself. So as soon as you show somebody a thing, whether it's just your loved one or on social media to the world or whatever it is, you fear judgment, you get imposter syndrome, you feel not good enough. Little old me, you know, you do that, all that questioning. So it wasn't starting that took the courage, because to me that was play and that was fun. And that's what I love about creativity. And that's what I would love more women to embrace, is having more fun and play in their lives, a bit more freedom. Starting a thing is easy. It's kind of keeping at it and progressing that's difficult. So I think that's kind of where people have said to us, we've been brought up, haven't we? We're a nation of people that says, oh, if you're going to start something, you better finish it. And actually, I think, like, well, why should I make my son do drums for 7 years? If he wants to do it for 1 year and then do flute and then do basketball and then do baking, you know, a smorgasbord of things is great. Yeah. But the bravery comes when you kind of go all in on a thing and you go, this is my thing. This is going to require effort and attention and focus and energy. Oh my God, what's that going to cost? What's that going to cost me? What people are going to think? That's where, for me, that's where the courage and the bravery comes in. It took me so long to say it, so long. It's been 3 years. But in my opinion, it took me so long to say to anybody publicly, like, I'm an artist. And I was like, I'm an artist. And my husband would go, oh, my wife's an artist. And I go, shut up, don't say that. It's so embarrassing. Oh my God, it's so embarrassing. And it was like, now I'm like, I'm an artist. I'm a contemporary landscape artist. And it's like, that's where the courage comes. I think going all in is where the courage comes, because you can try all sorts.
Oh, do you know, I was taking notes there, because I was like, the bravery of all in just sounded so interesting to me, because in a very different way to you, I am also a jack of all trades. And actually what's been really exciting for me in the last 4 years as we've built this business is the sudden realization that I want to become a master of life. That's the thing I want mastery of. So I want to know that whatever happens when we die, I've like squeezed every drop of possibility and joy and potential out of my life. And so I'm taking what I would describe as a PhD in life, right? That's where my passion is. And what I love about that as a chosen decision is almost what you said earlier, it allows me to play wherever I want, right? But the commitment to mastery of life is where I'm all in, right? And so I listen to you and I go, because I think that commitment of being all in is really exciting. Like, it's exciting suddenly to not feel like a jack of all trades, master of none, but just to say, I'm carving my path of what a remarkable life looks like. And I look over the way to you and I go, there's somebody else doing the same thing. Is that how it feels for you?
Yeah, it feels like I've stepped onto that island, if we go back to that analogy, and I've chosen which mountain it is I'm going to climb so I can see out, you know. And it's kind of that vantage point, it's that lens, it's that energy. Or I sent out my emails the other day and I had a friend come back and say to me, oh my goodness, how do you find time to do all this? And I was like, I don't know if I'm doing it or being it. And I actually think I'm being it. So I can't not do this, because this is me, this is who I am. I can't go all week and not paint or doodle or sketch, because I can't not do that. So I think there comes a point where, when you're all in and you want to take this PhD in whatever it is you're doing, there comes a point where you don't do it anymore, you be it. That's really bad grammar. You are it.
No, we can do doing it, and being, that works for us. Yeah,
I'm going to coin that. It's on a t-shirt already. You are it. It just becomes, I guess it's how they say about changing habits, isn't it? You know, you change your behavior for so long and then it becomes a newly formed habit. And I think that's what happens, but on a much deeper level. You kind of align where your heart was crying for you to be, where your brain said, okay, let's shift over here. You start to repeat this action and repeat and repeat. And all of a sudden, it's just your whole body is that thing.
Yeah, I totally get that, because I don't know about you, but I realized recently, even though lots of circumstances haven't changed, I don't have a plan B anymore. It's like, this is just the way it's going to pan out, and it might take a long time, but that's that's the whole point, right? Because it's not, there isn't actually a destination apart from dying, and I'm in no rush to get there, right? To say, I don't need to have a plan B anymore, because this is, for want of a better word, it's my life's work, right? To be in full expression of who I'm meant to be. And I'm hearing that with you too, but I want to come back to one thing. That moment where you said, for the first time, I'm a contemporary landscape artist, because I really get that, and I think our women will too. I wrote a piece recently where I said I'm an international keynote speaker and an author and a leader and a coach, and I'm writing it going, oh my god, the police are going to come and get me, right? But none of these things are lies. Like, I am an international keynote speaker, I am an author, I'm a leader and I'm a coach, and I would own leader and coach more than the other two, even though the stages I'm speaking on are getting bigger by the moment. The book's doing really well. There'll be another one, hopefully, within the next sort of 12 months. At the moment at which you said that, did you say it before you believed it, or did you believe it before you said it? There's my question.
I believed it before I said it, but then I felt foolish, egotistical, affected. You know, if I'd have worked on being a rocket scientist and I got like a piece of paper that said, you are now officially a rocket scientist, I'd go, oh, I'm a rocket scientist, because this piece of paper tells me and tells you, and it's proof and evidence. But something like art, you don't get to a point, you know, even the masters, they don't get to a point where they go, this is it, I'm not doing anything else. This is, I've accomplished my life's work. I'm just going to sit back and watch Netflix. They don't do that. They just keep going. They have curiosity, they have action, they have repetition. They just do that over and over again. So for me, it was, I did believe it, but I also found a tribe as well as remarkable women that are specifically around creating art and making your work and your art kind of come together as well. And that really helped. So again, finding another tribe of people who can kind of help me articulate where I'm at. Mm. And I think as soon as somebody paid money for a thing, because we have these exchanges, don't we, of logic and reason, and you think, okay, somebody paid me for a thing, that means it's a different thing, that means I am that thing, somebody on the internet, so I am that thing. And you can't just say it, we need evidence and proof, which is totally mental.
I love that. Yeah. I mean, it's a thing that I just want to pause on for a second, because I really want our women to hear that everybody goes through this piece. And that, because I think you as well as me would be one of those people would look at and go, oh, no, but it's easier for her. And I don't know about you, but I mean, the day you'll remember, because you helped to design the cover of my book and all the rest of it, you'll remember how edgy it was for me to put that out in the world. And to be honest with you, I felt like I'd literally just run out into the world naked and gone, look at me, in the most horrific way possible. I didn't see that coming. And so I look at you and I think people will think it was easy for you too. And I think it's important for people to hear actually that you still have that voice going, yeah, don't be a big show off, right?
Oh, good. Yeah, massively, hugely. And I think when it's something creative, I think, and particularly women, you know, if it's playful or fun or creative, that's even worse, because that's just messing about. You know, so then you're like, oh gosh, I really want to be an interior designer or fashion or a cook or blog about food or whatever creative passion you have. And you think, oh no, that's not real. That's not a real job. That's not a real pursuit. People are going to judge that. So you feel like that makes it even worse, which is totally, totally bizarre. But also, you know, we're the center of our own universes. We're always going to be the center of our own universes. Nobody else gives as much of a shit as we do about what we're doing. And that's like, that's a revelation. Like, if I put out a piece of artwork on Instagram, my 300 followers might or might not see it. Oh gosh, you know, and not forget about it in 10 minutes. It's not such a great big deal. And I think that fear is what holds people back. When I was doing an art demo the other week to an art group, I was like, yeah, we're going to splash a little bit here. And oh, there's a dribble. And they were like, and I was like, it's fine, just leave it. It's good. You know, what's the problem about the dribble? If we don't like the dribble, we can do it again. We can do it on another piece of paper. And people were really fearful for me that there was a dribble. And it just really made the painting, because it was like all water and mud and stuff. So it kind of worked. And it was like, do you know what? Those fears, people have them for you. And then it becomes even harder to break out. So sometimes you do have to find a little bit of rebel, even if it's not your natural state, and just flick the V's at everybody and say, do you know what? I'm just going to do this. And if you don't like it, you know, stuff it. I mean, I posted just yesterday, I did a bit of a tribute painting to Van Gogh, because we're going to see the Van Gogh thing at the weekend. And it was like, what I really love about being judged and people not liking my artwork, and not everybody will, is that they also did that to Van Gogh. So for a moment, I can compare myself to Van Gogh because they judge me and they judge him. What an amazing thing. So there's always one side. But yeah, care less about what you're doing and care more about how you're going to take it forward. You know, care less about the little bits that come out.
Yeah, because, and that's so important. That you've said it, because it's really interesting that took me a while to work this out, right? But because we, exactly as you say, because we're like in the center of our own universe, we think everybody's seen the thing the 100 times that we've seen it, and they've heard the stuff the 120 times that we've said it, and so two things for me was, one, I realized that just because I'd said a thing 100 times didn't mean a person had heard it 100 times. Most people hadn't even heard it once, and so I was like, oh, I can't say this again, I have to say something new, you know. And people were like, I missed the first episode, what was it? And the second thing was that when clients come to me, because you'll know copywriting is part of my zone of genius, and say, can you help me with my website or something, I'm like, just get it out there, just get something totally rubbish out there. And the fear on their faces, and I'm like, you're gonna hate your first website, whatever it is, you're gonna hate it 6 months after you've built it, and no one's looking anyway. I mean, who is it you think is actually typing your name into the internet and going, must see if they've launched a website yet? But we forget that, you know, because our universe, it's so big.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, even my mum hasn't really looked at my website, and she's like, my number one fan. Yeah. People really don't care so much. So I think that preciousness comes from a sort of fragile place. I think when you're robust, you bounce like rubber, and you can just bounce up and bounce on and get on with things. When you are fearful and in doubt about something, you go into quite a brittle state, and you know that if you drop, you're going to kind of shatter like glass, or at least you're going to break, and you're going to put yourself back together, and it's not going to be the same. So I think there needs to be a robustness about any creative pursuit, because you're going to get it totally wrong many times, and that's part of the process. So I learn as much by painting a painting that goes wrong as I do by painting a painting that goes right. And I've got a portfolio full of stuff that's rubbish, that I hate, that I wouldn't ever share, but I've learned something, a really valuable lesson sometimes with everyone, you know, so they serve a purpose.
I've got a feeling we learn more from what goes wrong than what goes right, unless if we're willing to have a look, right? It's just frustrating when you're 3/4 of the way through a great piece of art and then you screw it up, right? But I do remember, as you were telling the story about the blobs, I don't know if you remember it, really early doors, it was a lion you'd painted, remember? And you'd flick some art on it, you'd flick some paint on it, and it looked fantastic, I remember.
Yeah, yeah, I did this colourful lion, I don't know why, I was exploring a lot of different things, and now I've kind of settled into subjects I like. But yeah, I did this lion, I was doing it in ink, and the teacher had shown me how to use a needle to dip into ink and then use like a drawing pen. And I'm a bit clumsy and I'm a bit, you know, I'm always a million miles an hour, and I dropped it. I was like, oh shit. Oh my God, I've totally ruined it. And I was like, no. And then I did, I flicked it and I actually dropped it again to try and recreate. And it did look great. And it looked like it kind of just shook its mane out or whatever it was. And it was just, yeah, embracing the mistakes and embracing the learning. Nothing kind of teaches you that as much as things in the public realm, because although we're the center of our own universe, you have to feel you've learned enough to put something out. And creativity for me is like this magic portal that you can step through. So my creative superpower is totally unique to me. It's totally unique to you. It's totally unique to every person, and it's limitless. So I can create as many paintings in my life as I want to. You can write as many books as you like. Somebody can play the piano for the rest of their days. You know what I mean? It's like, it's totally limitless. It's totally unique. And it's where our value comes from, I think, about what we can offer, because it's how we express ourselves. So one person can wear a black dress, another person can wear a black dress and look totally, totally different. They're both little black dresses. And that's because your creativity is how you express what comes out. And it's so, so unique. That you have to learn your own lessons with creativity, I think.
I want to ask you this. What's the message you want to get out in the world? And let's play with a good, if we could just slap a billboard up everywhere that everyone was going to read, and it was your billboard, what would it say? I put you on the spot with this because I haven't given you, this is a pre-question, but let's just, you're a rebel. Let's see what comes out of your mouth.
No, I think I know it. I think it's say hello to your creative self. Because I don't think it's about finding it or discovering it. It's absolutely there. I think you've got to make friends with it and welcome it in and get to know it. So say hello to your creative self. I mean, the World Economic Forum has said that creativity was like number 10 on the most desirable skills list a few years ago, and it's jumped up to number 3. So if that doesn't tell you how important in the future creativity and being a creative thinker and a problem solver and all that's going to be, nothing will really. And again, it's the difference between creativity and creative pursuits, but say hello to your creative self. You will unlock a superpower. You will unlock and unleash something totally unique that can never be taken away, that is absolutely limitless and shines and shows all of your values in your life. That's your creative self.
So tell me this, because I just know there's somebody who's got right to the end of this, right? And they've gone, yeah, but not me, right? And so what do you do with the one who comes in and you go, yeah, you can do this. And you know what, art's not, turns out to not be their thing. Like you look at their art and you go, no, I get it. They're like really struggling with this. You're a creativity coach generally. Where do you go next? What do you do to unlock it with them?
Well, it's really similar to a lot of the things that you and Nick say when you're life coaching. So I know Nick introduced me to the saying that was somebody else's saying, I can't remember who it was, I am creative before I am reactive. Mm-hmm. So I say, and my little tagline on Instagram is, I'm a creative living adventurer. So that means creative pursuits, but it also means, how do I create this? How do I create that? What do I want to create from this situation? What do I want to create in my life or the people's lives, the world? And I think it's kind of stepping back into that space before you decide what your creative pursuit is. So when I speak to people who really like the idea of doing art but aren't very good at it, or say, oh, I'm not creative at all, you're like, you make a mean spreadsheet. You know, you work out all these analysis of data through working that out. That is creativity. You go to the fridge and you haven't been to the shops and you rumble together a fantastic dinner for the kids. That is creativity. You have the same wardrobe because you can't afford any more clothes and you reuse that outfit like 20 times in 10 different ways. That's creativity. And I think people get put off of their creative selves because they can't do a certain creative pursuit. And that's what I see a lot. I can't play the piano, therefore I'm not creative. I can't paint, therefore I'm not creative. That's total nonsense. So step back into that zone of saying hello to your creative self, understanding how that manifests in your life, and then move forward. And yeah, painting might not be your thing. Writing might not be your thing. But there will be a thing. There will absolutely be a thing. It might be detailing your car with an earbud. Who knows? But, you know, there's going to be a thing.
And I think denying it is a great tragedy when people do, right? Because that, you know, I just can't imagine, a bit like you saying, being the thing rather than doing it. I can't imagine a world where I don't have access to books that I then teach to other people. You know, that's one of my creative things, is like, I'll read 100 books and I'll give you the essence in an hour of what I think you might need to move forward. And I'm so grateful for that gift. And I feel so lucky that even, you know, like 5-year-old me, and you'll probably remember, like even when I was 12, you know, I wanted to be a librarian because I thought librarians read books all day. It wasn't like, I'm not going to move the books around. I'm just going to sit in the library and read the books, right? And tell people which ones to read. And so I can't imagine a world where I don't have that ability to digest and express in whatever way that looks like for me. And I can't imagine a world where, you know, even simple things like when I'm planning a masterclass, it's on a big giant pad with felt tip pens and I'm drawing little cartoons. And am I gifted at that? Yes, in the sense that I might not be the best artist in the world, but I can draw something that will hook you in and be interested in what it is we're going to be saying, right? And I know on a personal level, I'd rather see someone's creative sketch than a PowerPoint slide, right? But also, I deeply admire people who can make the best PowerPoint slides in the world, right? So I'm kind of in this space of exactly what Kelly's saying is like, go find your creative self, let them in, because that expression is part of why we were put on the planet, in my view.
Yeah, we had cave art like 30 or 40,000 years before we had agriculture. Mm-hmm. There you go. That tells you exactly how important creativity and self-expression is to us as human beings. So it's really, really important. And I know we're talking mostly about women because it's remarkable women, but women do get a little bit of this squash out of them over the years, you know. Oh, they're just lads. Oh, you know, men never grow up. Of course they're going to play football. Of course this. Oh, yeah, go in the kitchen and make the dinner, sort the bills out. You know, there is an element of that, I think, that takes away a lot of fun and play and rebelliousness and freedom and free-spiritedness from women, if we allow it to. And I think that's what we've got to get back in touch with, because it does impact on your leadership abilities, on your employability, on your expression of yourself, on your individuality, on your sort of wellness as well. There's a massive correlation between creativity and wellness. And I think that we all need to just remember how we used to play and be a lot more and bring it forward into now. Definitely.
It's funny, you just when you said play, there were all these images of toys from when I was a kid flashed into my mind. So let me ask you this as a final question. To all the women who are listening to this and going, oh, blimey, I better make space for creativity in my life, let's set them a challenge for the day they hear this podcast, right? What's your invitation that would have them in action?
Okay. My invitation to all of you lovely women who are thinking maybe you don't have room for being creative or you're not creative is to do nothing. It's to do a little thing. It's to actually notice the times in the day and the times in the week when you're creative, and maybe journal them or maybe share them or maybe talk about them with your friends. I can absolutely 1,000,000% say you will notice, without trying to be creative, if you really pay attention to it, you will notice that you do plenty of creative things. From how you sort your finances out, to what you cook, to how you choose your clothes in the morning, to how you dress your house, to the details you notice on a walk, you will notice and uncover far more creativity in your life than you ever thought. And it will delight you and it will surprise you. And you'll be so excited that you'll probably want to go on and do something creative. So don't do anything creative. Just notice your own innate creativity.
And that, as I would have expected from you, is pure genius, because no one has to add anything to the list, right? It's just to be out in the world noticing when you creatively crack a problem, you creatively rearrange an event that needs something different, don't it? Whatever it looks like, you fix a cake, you know, it doesn't matter, but let's just notice what that is. So, do you know what? It's been so funny listening to this, because one of the things I like to do when we're recording is I take notes on what's the title of the podcast going to be. And I've got I've got 5 different titles here. So I don't know yet, but having 5 different titles is reflective of the generosity of what you've shared with us today. So I want to say thank you for that. And I want to say thank you for being with us. And to everybody who's listening, you can find Kelly. Where can people find you, Kelly?
Okay, so before we do that, let's put all 5 descriptions out and let people decide and have fun with deciding which one they like. Okay. That's an invitation for you to play around with not being perfect about your description of this session.
Great.
So you can find me at kellyherrick.com, which is Kelly, HERRICK, and I'm on LinkedIn, Instagram, and Facebook, because I can't stand Twitter, and at I am Kelly Herrick. You'll find me, and you'll find me on your network and things. So yeah, you'll find me.
Beautiful. And for those of you who want to find us, if you haven't yet, because I did find recently, I'm surprised at how many people find us via the podcast, but other than, excuse me, I can't even string a sentence, and not via the routes that I would have thought would be more obvious. So if you want to come and play with us, come on to www.remarkablewomen.co.uk. You can sign up for a daily burst of rocket fuel there, which is a tiny message designed to inject some creative spirit and some action into your day, or some reflection. Or you can come and explore what it means to be in our community or to explore some of our videos, or also what it would be like to have a life of remarkable leadership. So that's all from us, except for me to say thank you so much for being with us, Kelly.
Thank you. Cheerio.
Goodbye, guys. See you soon.